So just to recap our general framing questions, we solved the Gemara together. It's not a very long Gemara, but it's a Shas topic that connects us to a few other passages, the Gemara in Sukkah, Gemara in Basra, try to pull us into the Daf Yomi world, a few other such places. And we set up a few basic questions that we wanted to try to understand before. We asked, what do the words even mean of this Sukkah? And if we're going to try to take on the sugya of Matana Manasseh Hafsir, how do we even understand the concept? It sounds like it's a completely semantic distinction. But we know we have such a thing as lending property. So what in the world is the difference between lending something and giving it from Matana Manasseh Hafsir? You would think, you know, if I would say to somebody, listen, you can have my car, but I need it back tomorrow, that's called lending. Even though those words would seem like the exact same as Matana Manasseh Hafsir. But we know that it's not simply a semantic difference because it has big halachic implications. If I lend you a lulav, that's not going to work. If I give you a lulav on the Tana Manasseh Hafsir, it will work. So somehow there is a real concrete halachic difference between the two, and we have to figure out exactly what that is. And then we also asked the other side of the question, maybe it's the same question, as to what make something a matana if you don't get to keep it. In many contexts, you can imagine that if I were to give you a gift and say, by the way, I need it back by 10:30, it wouldn't be considered a gift. And what even makes this a conversation? And then we talked about trying to figure out, if we had to guess, how would we lay things out? Where would we think it might work? Where would we think it shouldn't work? And we came up with a conclusion, I think, if I can speak on behalf of all of us, that when you really have a debt to somebody, you really have a need to give somebody money because you're buying something, or because you would borrow something, or because you damage their stuff, whatever it is, that presumably would not work with Matana Manasseh Hafsir. It's hard to imagine you can pay off an actual monetary debt that you have and also expect to get the money back. While maybe it's a conversation that we could have if it was something where it's more symbolic. And it opened up the question, how exactly to understand where Kedushin fits in. And so we could hear that maybe it is symbolic, and maybe there's more to talk about. And yet, when we saw the actual Gemara, so we saw after some back and forth, the basic conclusion of the Gemara is, well, first of all, that there's an assumption that it should be consistent, which is interesting, that if we should have one answer to the question, Matana Manasseh Hafsir is or is not a Matana, the Gemara seems to assume there should be one answer to that question. And the inclination is that the answer is it is good. But Kedushin Davka not. And why not? Because it's got something or another to do with Chalipin. And Chalipin, we saw a few months ago, that's got its own set of issues. We don't even want to get involved with anything Chalipin like. And therefore, Kedushin is an exception. Right, so it's a basic recap of what we saw yesterday. So let's try to take it from there. Let's try to figure out a few things. We need to try to understand, we'll say a little bit more about this Chalipin issue, and then try to look at the different angles from which this question could be examined. What exactly is the lay of the land as far as the Kedushin question that comes up? That's our Sugya after all. That's our Mesechtus. That's what we're going to be most interested in. And figure out where is the issue. Is the issue in Matana Manasseh Hafsir? Is the issue in Kedushin? Or is it somewhere else? Or some combination of the two? And then we'd also like to maybe say a few words about the other dinim that come up in this context. Probably we'll try to do towards the end. So that's our rough agenda. So let's try to first consider the question of Chalipin. So what in the world does Chalipin have to do with Matana Manasseh Hafsir? Where does one come into contact with the other? How does it become one thing or the other? Jonah, you look like you're half, like your hand was on Manasseh Hafsir. Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, something that I found a little bit jarring and surprising was that no one was really to take Gemara literally, saying that the problem with Matana Manasseh Hafsir is that it is Chalipin.
Okay.
You could easily
do
the Gemara that way.
Could you?
Yeah.
All right, I want to drop a little bit. Let me finish the statement. I asked you again. Could you? Yeah.
I finished. And yes. Okay. No, everyone seemed to say that it was Dame Le Chalipin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what it ended up being is that our government chief was saying something along the lines of the fact that return is problematic.
The fact that what is problematic?
The fact that the gift returns to the original owner, let's say,
right.
Is similar to Halipin, and therefore...
Like Rashi says, for example, right? That's the last line here. Right, the Avatosus Rehazakin, this is the same thing in similar language, a little bit different language, the same idea. V'hai v'chalip in dami, ki kinyin besudr, de'enu ela ocheiz ba, u'mach zero. So, you're saying that you're surprised that it doesn't say more than that? It says that it is, you think it was to say, it is chalip.
Yeah, no one decided to read the Gemara. I think it's something that's more pashut, meaning... You might have to, like, touch them and out a little bit, but...
Well, so let's think about that for a second, or if I may repeat. Could you say that? Because why would I actually maybe be more surprised by this than the other way around? You might think that actually there's a pretty big difference instead of thinking they're the same. I think no one wants to comment on this.
Yeah, I want to say, like, interestingly, the pasuk of Chalipin, Rashi makes it, like a very unintuitive... gives it a very unintuitive explanation that chalipin doesn't work because chalipin in general is a shvach kinyan. So like Rashi,
not Rashi here,
the chalipin itself. So I think it's interesting that that sugya also it's very unclear whether the Gemara itself is discussing chalipin as it pertains to kiddushin or chalipin in general.
Right, he has a similar structure to the sugyas. And then if you want to actually draw in the chalipin, so the truth is just to kind of follow up what you're highlighting. So this whole sugya, we have a number of points that need to be clarified before we can get anywhere, right? Because we don't know if whatever issues we're going to have here are driven by Matan al-Manasseh Hafsir or driven by some Kiddushin-based issue. And the Gemara throws in a third monkey wrench to keep us distracted by saying that Chalipin is somehow involved. And then we can have to say, all right, well then let's try to remember what was going on with Chalipin. Is Chalipin a Chalipin issue, or is Chalipin a Pesach Kiddushin issue? Is Chalipin a fundamental issue, right? And Gemara there really brings up, to rewind further, a different issue with Chalipin, right? The Gemara didn't say that Chalipin per se is bad, but that Chalipin itself has some detail that we don't like, right? What was that detail? The Gemara says in Daf Gimel? Pachos Mishavah Bruta. And that was a little bit of a strange detail to focus on. We spent some time trying to figure that out. Because no one says that the chalipin has to be done with less than a shavah bruta. And why should the possibility of doing it with less than a shavah bruta disqualify it completely? And that was something we had to spend some time figuring out. So now the Gemara is trying to pull us all back into that all over again, trying to figure out how Matan al-Manasseh Hafsir shares anything in common with Chalipin. So as Noah was pointing out, there's a lot of moving parts here. There's a lot that's flying around. So here, Rashi's point that you take the Sutter back, so therefore it's like Matan al-Manasseh Hafsir. So Jonah, you'll forgive me, you're trying to say, oh, how come he's not being bolder here? How come he's not braver and saying it's the exact same thing? So you'll forgive me, it's just a thought exercise. We ask you to say maybe the exact opposite of what you're saying. Why would you think that maybe I wouldn't even want to come close to saying that Chalipin and Matan al-Manasseh Hafsir are the same thing? Maybe even this much is too bold. What could bother you about this Rashi? Yes, no.
In fact, it says Chalipin.
Okay, so it says Chalipin, therefore what? So
like, the fact that there's some sort of, it seems like there's some precedent for some Chalipin-related topic to be an issue, if the Gemara says Chalipin.
Right, okay. So
even if conceptually it seems counterintuitive.
Well, here's what I'm trying to zero in on. That Chalipin, Rashi says, yeah, Chalipin, same thing, you get it back. Right, but what's not so clear about that? You get it back, yes?
Not so clear if you get it
back. Right, okay, why is it not so clear?
It's possible that the person can keep it.
So first of all, Gemara says in the Darim that the person could keep it. Right, so it's not like you have to give it back. And the truth is, if I were to ask you, what is the more fundamental model of Chalipin, giving it back or keeping it, what would you say? probably keeping it, really. Right? Because if you recall, when we did, and sorry for those just joining us, the sugya that the chalipin is a previous topic, but when it comes to chalipin, just to give a minute of recap about this, so chalipin really means two different types of processes. We're familiar, we go to weddings, we've seen the Chiras Chametz, and we see a Kinyan Sudr take place, where the rabbi picks up the handkerchief and asks the people involved to lift up the handkerchief or a pen or whatever it is, and then the rabbi usually gets it back. So that's our impression of what we call chalipin. Kinyan Sudr chalipin. But if you recall, we discussed that Kinyan Sudr is really only one of two types of chalipin. What the real chalipin is bartering. You trade one item for the other. So when you actually do chalipin, you give the other person something and you take his thing. So since nowadays what we're more familiar with is more of a symbolic chalipin that is called Kinyan Sudr, so we tend to just take it back because the transferring of the object, the giving of the object from one person to the other is really more symbolic, so there's no need for the other guy to keep it. But if he wants to keep it, he can. And not only that, but maybe that's really the default. What it really was about the other person keeping what you're giving. So to say, oh yeah, chalipin, and that's when you get it back. So it's like matana manasa haxer, or matana manasa haxer is like that. And that's not only not a constant detail of chalipin, but it's not even really what should be the default. It's a little bit of a funny point of comparison.
Pusuk says that the minhag ha'olam is to return it, though.
Mm-hmm.
So that's inconsistent with what we just said.
Well, maybe it's very consistent, actually. Could it because I'm a contrarian mood today. I'm going to say the opposite of whatever you suggest. But it actually might be very consistent, because Tosfos says the minhag ha'olam. So Tosfos is directing us maybe to something else, if you think of it that carefully. Right? So then the question could be, what really bothers us about chalipin? Is it, or in this case, what really bothers us about matana manasa haxer and what it shares with chalipin? Is it what it is, or is it what it looks like? If you want to tell me that matana manasa haxer really is chalipin, that's going to be a difficult sell. Because matana manasa haxer is giving you something and commanding you to give it back. And chalipin, I'm just giving you something symbolically, you don't have to give it back, and it's really maybe symbolic of something where you don't give it back. And this detail is not a random minor detail, right? It's the whole definition. Right? We're seeing that matana manasa haxer, giving it back is crucial. If you don't give it back, the whole thing doesn't happen. And chalipin, giving it back is not really what it's about. So to compare the two on a fundamental level, it's kind of difficult. So Tosfos, sorry, I know you're going to get back in a second. So Tosfos, when Tosfos says minhag ha'olam, so maybe Tosfos is not contradicting that at all, but Tosfos is saying that, look, whatever chalipin is, alumnus, whatever it is, I don't know. And the people watching, they for sure don't know. But what does it look like? It looks like there's this, okay, you hold on to this and give it back to me for a second. Because minhag ha'olam, that's what happens. What practically happens, the chalipin that people see, is the rabbi gives a handkerchief and then you give it back. So that's not conceptually telling you too much about chalipin, but it's the appearance. So it looks like matana manasa haxer. So that's what we're worried about. So if we're worried about what it looks like, so what does that sound like as far as the nature of this issue? Gezeira, right? It sounds like that's indeed what Tosfos goes on to say. Right? So it sounds like this is not really a fundamental problem. And like the Gemara indicates, matana manasa haxer really is a matana. But we have a gezeira because of the appearance of chalipin.
I thought the whole issue with chalipin and matana manasa haxer was the
effect of her feelings.
Uh-huh.
For it's nice. So, I mean, so that's
a good question also, what really is the issue. So the Gemara says that G'nai L'Ishah, and that is a G'nai, the Gemara is actually not as explicit about this. If you want to take a look for a second. Right, Rashi puts it in.
Yeah.
Right, so the Gemara says...
Same people have gears of changes here, and the same gears of changes there.
Oh, so which one is he talking
about?
The
same people who take Nafsha out of the Gemara and will take the phrase, change the gears of here to be, that it looks like, that adds the...
You better high going.
Like the Ramban specifically makes both of those gears of changes.
Oh, so that's an interesting point. So, but the gears of change here, you're talking about Rav Haigon?
Yeah, where quote, he takes out the word Nafsha, where it says, Nafsha would imply that it's G'nai,
mm-hmm.
but if you take out Nafsha, it's easier to see that it's a technical problem about how Kalevin works.
Okay.
You know, more about that, all those different issues. And then so, Ramban here as well has these different gears of about that it seems like Zera is more explicit in our Gemara.
So how does that help us, though, for that point? So here, if you're saying that here, it makes it less fundamental, and there it becomes more fundamental?
Meaning... Both of them see it not as an issue about. Both see that there's some mechanical issue with Kalevin. It's not about G'nai, they don't start talking
so
about.
So when it comes to Kalevin.
Both of them are finding more technical issues. And that those technical issues are found in both places. Meaning, Kalevin, which is a technical thing, is not the same thing as Matan al Maslaha. There's no spiritual similarity between the two of them to be comparing to in this Gemara. Kalevin is a special mechanical issue in both of these Gemaras.
Okay, so let me just see, tell you, what you're saying is as follows, that if you have the text, like Tosfos says it's a Gezeirah, and some of the Rishonim have a Gersa from Rav Haigon, which is more explicit about this, that it is indeed a Gezeirah. So if you're saying that it's a Gezeirah, so then that goes back to the Minhag HaOlam idea, that really there's no conceptual similarity between the Sugya and Chalipin. It's just that they look alike. So we're worried about the appearance of Chalipin. So then what's the second half of the sentence? That what is Chalipin's problem? Khalifin's problem is
so
something about the process.
It's not Kesef, and it's similar issues that we're going to have there, and how you do compare it to Sada or don't compare it to Sada. But, you know, so it's going to respond by different issues in that gear stuff. And that's
I wonder if you need the second part. I mean, it's interesting in general to try to figure out if those two issues are related to each other.
And, yeah, I think the Ramadan is very clear in the fact that he finds the need to make these gear changes. It's not so clear whether he has his gear subs. The way that they've made them, based on these impressions.
Now, the Ramban, obviously, also has other points of similarity between Chalipin and Matan al Manas Lahachzir, about the Hanah al Asner, which is also interesting.
Well, it has to be, you know, if you keep my Girsa, then you have to start talking, if you keep the current Girsa, then you have to start talking about those things. But if you stick with the other Girsa, I have a different way of looking at the Gemara.
And that's what connects
so
it to the
So it seems to me that the Ramban feels the need that, and in both things he has, if you hold one way, I will give you this svara. If you stick with our Girsos, then he has a different svara. And he does that both moves in both scenarios. So either he has one shita that he's trying to make and therefore changes both Girsos in a way to fit his shita on Kalevin, and he offers almost Rashi in both cases of what it means to keep with this Girsa. But he seems
okay,
both
interesting. All right, so let's see if that follows through. I think the first part is definitely interesting. You have to see how they're linked. Because to say that here it's a Gezeira, that sounds like you can say that by itself, but if there's what to gain from looking at, we have to figure out. It's also worth noting here, and this is something that's come up a couple times, the question of what are the purpose of these Gezeiras. When I tell you that the Gezeira that something should work but doesn't work, so you have a whole host of questions. Right? One question is, how does that happen? If people are really married in that Torah, so how do they become unmarried? So, okay, we have to resort to Afkeinu Rabbanon L'Kedusha Minei. We have to say that Chazal, when they made this Gezeira, they also negated its power to work as Kedusha, even though it would have worked Min HaTorah, which is a somewhat radical step, so it's interesting. And then you have to understand why. So, okay, we shouldn't allow Matan al Manas Lahachzir, so you shouldn't think that Chalipin works. What's so terrible if you do think that Chalipin works? Okay, so you'll make a mistake, someone else will make a mistake. What exactly is the nature of the Gzeira? So it seems to be, as we discussed in other sugyas, that maybe we're just afraid of unclear, indeterminate marriage situations. So we don't want any svekas out there, so we don't allow these kind of situations that may lead to confusing positions. So all of that is interesting. So if you want to take this view that there's some kind of a gezeira because we're afraid that it looks like something and that's enough to stop us, we have to figure out what that means. No.
I think it's the Rashba who writes that the reason for the Gezeira is Chomer HaRayos, that's his Lashon. But if the issue is just that the marriage is in Chal to begin with, then what Arayos issue do you even have to start with? Because, okay, so it might be like an issue theoretically in Zunus if two people aren't married, but you don't have an issue of an Isha Pish.
Right, it's a whole different level. That's why it's interesting, this is the kind of thing that's under the surface, a number of these sukkahs, because it's really not so clear. What exactly are we afraid of? Why are we making these gezeiros? So it seems like there's this broad consideration that we just don't want to be involved in any kind of suffix marriages. We don't want to have situations where maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. So we don't want people misunderstanding what works and what doesn't work. So if something looks like chalipin and chalipin doesn't work, so then we're going to tell you not to do that, and we're going to be so aggressive about it that we're even going to negate its power as an effective kedusha. So that's an interesting question to start with. So you have then this view of Tosfos and those Rishonim who quote this Girsa Rav Haigon that the issue is the Gezeira, that this is something that Chazal stepped in and took off the table. What do the other Rishonim say? Other Rishonim have a more fundamental issue here with Kedusha and Matan Manas Lahatzir. What about the Ramban, Rashba? How do they understand it? Right, so don't you want to step in here?
Yeah,
it's your turn again. Now you waited long enough.
Hanah Hanisharas.
Okay, so something like that, right? That the Hanah has to stay there, and since the Hanah doesn't actually stick with her, so then that's a problem. Now, they both, the Ramban and the Rashba, both address the question that, well, wait a minute, but how do you know that Hana has to stay there in the first place? Right? Because you might say that we don't have a source yet that tells us that Hana has to stay. So where would you get the idea that Hana has to stay? All we know from, let's say, the first Mishnah, right? The Mishnah says, Haisha niknes bekesef that stays. I mean, how do we know from the Mishnah that the kesef has to stay? To say if that's all we have. So maybe you're working off the Shavapruta idea, that we know that it has to have some value, that it's not enough if it doesn't have anything to it. It's got to be worth something. That's my focus. The Mishnah, what's got to be worth? We assume at least the Shavapruta. So maybe if there has to be some value, if it's being taken away, there's no value. Yitzchak?
If you give her an apple and then she eats the apple, then that Hanah is no longer with her anymore. That should be kosher kedusha.
Ah, okay. So you can ask the question from two different directions. So you're asking the question from one direction, which is the apple gets consumed. And you can ask the question even more powerfully from other sukkahs, where it sounds like you can do a service that can serve as kedusha. Right, so that's even less valuable than the apple in terms of any object permanence, so to speak. So that's going to be akasha by itself. At least it's going to be akasha that we'll see from some other reasons, that it does seem like there is such a thing as hana that doesn't stick around. So that, it's akasha from that perspective. It's not necessarily a fatal akasha for the Ramban and the Rashi, we'll discuss in a second why not. But it's something to keep in mind, that there is at least a svara to say that we allow kiddushin with things that don't last. Now, parenthetically, your example of the apple, we could distinguish between the apple and the service, let's say, because the service is inherently ephemeral, it's not going to last for sure. And the apple, theoretically, so it could stick around, she chooses to make her benefit from eating it, but the apple is worth whatever it is, and then once she got it, she decided to destroy it. So, let's say, for example, no one says, although it's an interesting discussion, why not, that if the wife loses her wedding ring, that she becomes divorced that way. Right? The wedding ring, nowadays, will be used something that theoretically lasts, but it could get lost, it could get destroyed. That doesn't affect the end of the marriage. So, we don't really have a requirement that the Kest of Kedushin actually lasts forever. So where do we draw the line here? That's a fair question to ask. What exactly is this concept of lasting hana mean? Well, we could imagine some distinctions. So, okay, if the fact that the apple got consumed, right, she has this object, it was given to her, it's worth something, and now once she has it, she decides to eat it. Okay, fine. But the idea of doing a dance for her, doing some kind of a jig, doing some kind of performance, and that should count as kesef kedushin, that's really ephemeral, and yet that seems to work. So that's something we're going to have to figure out. How do you draw the line between this non-lasting hana and that? But why don't you ask the question from another direction? That things that are temporary do have monetary value, right? Because people pay money to see shows. People pay money to rent things. There certainly is a value that comes from temporary usage. And since the bar is pretty low here, right, you only need a shava pruta, it's not a whole lot of value. People actually in real life do pay serious money to rent jewelry for one night. So why is that not the case here? That it's very likely that if he's giving her a ring and saying, listen, I want this back, because I'm sitting here trying to keep a running list of least romantic marriage proposals, and it's not sure how well this is going to work out, and I don't want to give away my best ring, so I want this back tomorrow. So however you phrase it, or more realistically, it could be it's a family heirloom, people like to use their grandmother's ring, whatever it is. So whatever time she's having it, there is a good possibility that it is worth the shava pruta. If somebody would pay for valuable jewelry, people might pay a lot of money to wear jewelry for a night. So it's a decent case to be made that it is worth a shava pruta to have this ring for however long. So the truth is, the Ramban and the Rashba really address that. What do they say? Right, Marty?
It is worth value, but that's not what the guy was being punished.
Right, so the value is there, but we don't have any indication that that was the object of the Kiddushin. And that apparently, if he were to say, I hereby mekadesh you on the hana you get by having this ring for a night, all right, that could have worked. But he didn't say it. Now, that still raises a lot of questions. Because, could ask, as someone pointed out, we saw last month that the Ran says that when you have an effective method of Kiddushin, even if you're not using it, it could kick in anyway. He gave the example of if you do Kiddushin Shtar, and the Shtar turns out to be puzzle, but it's worth a Shava Pruta, the Shtar could end up being Kesef Kiddushin. So why don't we say here too, okay, so if this avenue that you're trying doesn't work, but there's an avenue that does work, so then let's let that kick in. So that's one technical question. But it's also interesting, why are we getting so caught up on saying that, well, it's not a lasting hana, if really what we mean is that it's just not a shava pruta in this form. So then let's just say that. And let's just say that you have to figure out the way in which you're getting a shava pruta of hana. So if it's for the rental, then focus on the rental. Otherwise, if it's not lasting, and you're doing it on the ring, and the ring shouldn't get to keep, then that doesn't count for anything. So it seems like it's kind of a roundabout way to explain what's going on. And that's something also that we'll have to figure out. Now, does the Rambam agree with the Ramban and the Rashba? What do you think?
Kind of seems like he does.
Kind of seems like he does. So some great Rishonim agree with you. The Ran agrees with you. Right? And it sounds like he does. It sounds like he's saying the same thing. That his language is what? It's not Magiola anything. That nothing actually reaches her. So the Ran says, yeah, he's saying the same thing as the Ramban and the Rashba, that there has to actually be something that lasts. And the Nachanami, if you were to decide to say, well, what about the rental value? What about all the jealousy that you provoked for the night when everyone looked at your wonderful ring? So if that is what you're addressing, so fine. And if not, But the language of Rambam doesn't sound so much like that. It sounds a little bit more like it's more fundamental, that there's something in the Kesef Kiddushin that requires it to actually last. So that's a big hole that we're going to have to figure out still. Why is this idea, why does there exist this idea, according to these Rishonim, that the Kesef Kiddushin has to actually last in some way? And it leaves us with a bunch of questions. What about other effective methods of Kesef Kiddushin which don't last, whether they are a performance or whether they're a consumable item or anything else? And if it's really just a way of saying it's not a show of proof of value, so then why don't we just say that? And then it doesn't add up to a show of proof of value. And if the circumstances were such that it does, then that should be enough. Why don't we just say like that? And does it make a difference if you decide to focus on the temporary value, like the Rishonim, like the Ramban and the Rashi explicitly say, or does it not make a difference? Those are all questions that we're going to have to try to figure out when we examine a little bit more about the Kiddushin issues. But what we see so far, with all these questions in the back of our minds for a moment, that essentially there seems to be a Machlokes Rishonim here on the basic question of, is Matana Amanas Lahatzir theoretically effective for Kiddushin? Because Tosis and Rav Haigon would say yes, it works. Matana Amanas Lahatzir Shma Matana, therefore it's effective. And the only reason not to do it is Xera. While these other Rishonim are saying, no, there's something more fundamental here. And there's something completely flawed. And maybe it's something that it shares with Chalipin. But whatever it is, there's something that just doesn't work. Yes, sir.
When I was reading the Rishonim, it seemed like they were all agreeing that it's effective. And that by the fact that they all said that it's a gezeira implies that they all think it's a technical problem.
Well, they don't all say it's a gezeira, that's the thing.
Most of them seem
so
to say that.
Some of them quote Rav Haigon, this is Geras who's saying it's a gezeira, but they don't necessarily all subscribe to that opinion. They mention it. So it seems my focus within that view. So that leaves us with essentially a question, does it work? What's the default? Does it work or does it not work? So what are they arguing about? So we don't know yet. Are they arguing about Hilchas Matana Manas Lahatzir? Or are they arguing about Hilchas Kesef Kiddushin? Or some combination of the two? So let's try for a few minutes at least to talk about the question of what is Matana Manas Lahatzir? So we asked, what is the difference between Matana Manas Lahatzir and simply blending somebody's something? How halakhically do you formulate the difference? So this is an issue which is a topic of debate among Rishonim, just how to characterize what's happening. But if you look, for example, at the Rush and Sukkah, and that, which you can't rush through, and that Ritva in Kiddushin, the Ritva doesn't have any English word that you can make a pun with, but the idea is the same. So what do they tell you? What do the Ritva and the Rush highlight? That this is essentially a complete transfer. And that the only way that it gets finished, that the Tanai gets fulfilled, is when the other party gives it back to you with a new kinyan. And that detail of the new kinyan, that's important to these Rishonim. That's important to the Rush and the Ritva. And so essentially, they don't spell this out so much, but just to highlight, if you want to ask the question this way, what's the difference between Matana Manas Lahatzir and lending something? So then the Rush and the Ritva are implicitly addressing that. They're saying that when you lend something, you, the person who originally owns it and lends it to someone else, we'll call you Mel, Right? So Mel, who lends the property to people, Mel is still the owner the whole time. So when you lend something to somebody else, they return it to you. You don't have to make a kinyan to you, right? Because it was always yours. So all they're doing is putting it back on your desk or whatever. There's no need for a halachic kinyan in the return phase, because they're just putting it back in your hands, what was already yours. While the matana minas lahachzir, they emphasize that it only comes back when there is an actual kinyan from the second guy back to the first guy. So if that's the issue, then it seems like the difference between the two is not so much what the receiver is getting, but what the first guy is giving up. Is the first guy releasing control completely, or is he not? That if he owns it, and he's letting you use it, but when you're done, it's still his, then that's a problem. That's not called ownership. But if he is relinquishing it, but he's doing that on the condition that it will come back to him, but during that time, it's relinquished, and the way it's going to come back to him is through another formal official kinyan, okay, then we have what to talk about. Yes, sir, you have a question?
The second party is giving something up if he doesn't do, if he does a loan by escrow.
Yeah.
Giving something up because he doesn't fill the mitzvah.
Right, yeah.
So it's not, it is both ways. Both parties could be giving something up regarding different types.
Well, what's the whole sense? You see, in the case of the escrow, right? So if I lend you my escrow, so what's the difference between my lending and my escrow and giving it a ton of mitzvah? So the difference is that when I lend it to you, it's still mine. And when you're finished with it, you wouldn't have to give it back to me. You just cease using it. And it's still mine. So then that is not good enough for Esro. Your usage of it is not going to work. While Matanamas Lahasir, the way the Rush understands it, is that I am actually giving it to you, and the only way it's going to return to my property is by a formal kinyan coming back to me. And therefore, since the second case works and the first case doesn't work, what's the difference between the two cases? Doesn't seem to be the differences on your end. It seems to be the differences on my end. That if I retain the ownership, that's what gets in the way of your fulfillment. So because I'm holding on to it, now this is not good enough for your usage. But if I relinquish it completely, even though I only did so because you promised me you're going to give it back, but during that time I relinquished it completely, apparently that's what's needed. So it comes out that according to these Rishonim, the difference between a gift and a loan is what interest the original guy maintains. Does he still own it? Or is he walked away completely until such time as it comes back? And just parenthetically, the Rush proves this, it feels like it proves it, from the Gemara of Al-Gula. Right? The Gemara says that it's a problem to do this with a cotton, to do this whole Matana Manas Lahachzir game with a cotton on the first day of Sukkos. Because the katan is able to be koneh but not makneh. So you'll give him the esrog, and fine, he'll lose it, but he can't be makneh back to you. So the whole deal of matan minas lahachzir is going to have a crucial flaw. So the Rush says, what do you see from there? You see that it has to really be an actual haknah. That it's not just that it stays in the possession of the adult until it comes back to him. But it transfers from party A to party B and has to transfer back to A. And therefore, that's how these Rishonim understand it, that it's actually leaving the hands, leaving the ownership, the title of the first owner, and has to formally come back in order for this to work. And of course, if it doesn't formally come back, then the Tanai isn't fulfilled, and then you have problems from that end. So I think it was Noah and then Yeshua was at the...
If he gives over possession of the object, then why would an individual not be okay if he doesn't return it? Meaning, okay, so then he stole something. But he was already his. I mean, even though it was
That's what we mentioned yesterday. So that's why the sugya is like complication on top of complication on top. Because you could have this discussion also with any other tonight, right? Forget about returning it, which has this inherent loopedness to it. But let's say I give you something. I'll give you an escrow against a present. I'll manas that you wash my car next week. After Simchas Torah, I want you to come back and wash my car. So Simchas Torah comes and goes, and a day later, so now you've been using the escrow for the whole of Sukkos, or at least the first day is what concerns us, but now it's a week later, and you happen not to wash my car. So then, that might be a problem, because now we see that a week and a half ago, you actually did not own the escrow you were using, because the condition later on went unfulfilled, and then maybe retroactively, indeed, tacos is no mitzvah.
What is it that retroactively it's not yours, therefore you're using it stolen?
Yeah, you're using it. Now, if we want to talk about the Aveira, that's an interesting question about when you violate the Aveira. But you don't have to come on some mitzvah about the Aveira for this. That simply the lack of ownership is enough of an issue. So since I pulled the rug out under your, you pulled the rug out of yourself by not fulfilling the condition, you know, I asked you to wash my car. So then that indeed could retroactively mess you up. So just the very presence of Tanai here has its own complications. Now it's even more complicated because the Tanai happens to require you also to give back the item that we're talking about. But we could have these issues even without that if we were just talking about Tanai.
And also, how can you make a kinyan on Yom Tov?
Oh, so that's an interesting question also. Now just parenthetically, we should probably discuss it separately, but I'll just mention it because you're asking it. So some Rishonim say that the issue of Kinyan on Shabbos and Yontif, because it's the Rabban, we allow it for Makom Mitzvah. Right, you may recall, we talked about this in the roundabout question about the marriage on Shabbos, that whole issue with the Ramah. Again, apologies to those who are here for that discussion. It happens from time to time. But so there is a position of Rishonim like that, and that this Taki is the proof. Right? So some of the, in general, it comes from the other direction. That the question of how absolute is the prohibition to make kinyanim on Shabbos and Yontif, so some point to that Gemara, a point to show that for the purpose of a mitzvah you can make a kinyan. But what we'll also see, here's a little bit of a preview, is that some don't take that approach and say that the only reason this is effective, the only reason this is permitted on Shabbos and Yontif is because it's somewhat of an incomplete transaction. So that there's something lacking in the kinyan of the Tanamanas Hatzir that makes it more okay on Yontif than it otherwise would be. So the question is actually a very fundamental question. So we're not up to it yet, but just to be aware that that's an important point. Okay, so this is the position of the Rush and the Ritva and a few others. That essentially what's happening is that it's a total gift to this guy, and it's completely his during this time. And this is a view Rabbi Achronim took, the Chassam Sofer says like this, a few others, the Sifa says like this, that this is essentially what happens. This is what a Matana Amanas Dehachzer means. And this affects other things. So for example, the din in Shulchan Aruch, that says that, I don't think I gave you the Shulchan Aruch to look at, if not I will maybe send it out to you, it's Din Mechosh Mishpa, that if you, let's say, take an ox, you can be makdish that ox. Because while it's in your hands, it's yours. And you can be makdish your property. So there's a lot of questions to ask about that. So the Nesivus has a whole discussion about that din, because first of all, on the one hand, we could understand that, okay, it's yours, it can be makdish your own things. But that's definitely going to get in the way of your giving it back. And you can give it back to the first guy and say, sorry, it's Kodesh, I hope you don't mind. But it's also a problem for the Kenyan. So that's going to be an issue to figure out.
There is one.
Yeah, with the second Kenyan, which affects the first Kenyan, right? The second first Kenyan is contingent on the second Kenyan, and the second Kenyan is going to be a problem because now it's Kodesh. So why is that not an issue? And also, they ask, why does the Shulchan Aruch bring this example that, oh, if you're makdish it, what if I sell it? Maybe it was Bukhara, I should be able to sell it too. I should be able to do a lot of things. Yes, go ahead.
Do you have to bring back that exact object, or can you bring an object that's very, like the same exact model?
Well, so that's actually an interesting question, too. We'll have to see about that, because what exactly is the nature of the Amanas L'Hachzer? Is it about the value, or is it about the object? Presumably, it's about the object. The question is there still room to flip that into something else? That probably is also going to fundamentally affect things. So that's an important question, too. So that's an issue that the Shulchan Aruch causes, provokes, is why is it not going to be a huge technical problem if you end up consecrating the animal in the middle? And once we're allowing that, why don't we talk about any other way of transferring the property, such as selling it or just giving it as a gift to some other party? That's something that we'll have to figure out. But, at least initially, so this is the view of a number of Rishonim, that Matada Manas L'Hachzer is a complete transfer of property. It's only going to come back to you with another formal transfer of property. And it is complete ownership from the recipient's part. The only difference is that there is a obligation agreed to in advance that it will be transferred in the reverse. But until that happens, it's fully transferred. And it's distinct from lending, in that lending, the original owner holds on to it title-wise the whole time. So far, so good? Makes sense? Now, there are some Rishonim who disagree. So, there are those who understand that here, the Rush quotes another view. The Rush is here in the Tshuvas HaRush. You probably haven't got up to this yet. This is longer. But the Tshuvas HaRush quotes with Victor Katz. Victor Katz probably sounds like the guy who sat next to you, Shana Aleph, but it's Rishon. So the Rush quotes his view that the reason that when one is Yotze Esro Lulav with Matana Manas L'Hachzer, the language he has is that it is a Kenyan Lizman. That it is essentially a temporary Kenyan. And it's a kinyan that eventually expires. And that apparently when the time to be chozer it comes, the kinyan has elapsed. So that's a fundamentally different kind of understanding. And presumably would not require a formal process of return in order for this to be finished, in order for this to play out. So that's a whole different view, and it's a view that some accepted as well. So Sahoshin accepted. And within that, then, there are different nuances. Remember, this position with Victor Katz was the one thing I had a discussion with Rav Gussman about. So I quote Rav Gussman so much this year. One time I spoke with him was about this, this with Victor Katz, about Matana Manas L'Hachzer. So what does that mean, a Kenyan Lizman? So there's still room to wonder, and Afronin has different nuances in this. Does that mean that it is a full Kenyan Lizman, that it gets complete ownership for the recipient, just it will eventually expire? Or do we say that because it's a Kenyan Lizman, that is fundamentally different in its nature? And that might be what we call, especially now for the Dafyomi Bambasra people, this is a terminology that's going to be very relevant, that it might be called a Kenyan Peros, which doesn't necessarily have to focus on fruit per se, but it means that you are not actually possessing the item, what we call a Kenyan Haguf, but it's actually a Kenyan on the benefit from the item and what comes out of the item, but we use a terminology of fruit. But the item itself, you actually don't own. And if that indeed is enough to be Yotzei Ulav and Esro, so then that's interesting. That's not so obvious at all. And that's something that we'll have to figure out. All right, so maybe we'll have to move to the stage two about, so if that's the survey of what exactly Matana Manas L'Hachzer could mean, so how does that interact with what Kesef Kedushin requires and demands? So maybe that we'll have to figure out on Monday. So let's just... quickly recap what we spoke about, and then we'll daven mincha. And again, tomorrow, be ready for some important Exodus-related events for Parshas Va'era. And just to recap what we spoke about today, so we noted that there was a fundamental question here, whether Kedushin does work by default with Matanah Manasa Hachzir, or doesn't. We know that it doesn't work at the end of the day, but is that because the Gezeira, that was the view of Tosfos and the Rav Haigon that some of the Rishonim quoted? Or is it more fundamental, like some of the Rishonim seem to understand, and that there's some inherent problem because the Hana doesn't last? And that's the view of the Rambam and the Rashba, and apparently the Rambam also. And the question of the Rambam fully agrees with the Ramban and the Rashba, in that they acknowledge that there could be value for a temporary holding, but that value wasn't the focus of the Kedusha, and therefore it can't be utilized here. And that prompted a bunch of questions that we left open. Well, why don't we, first of all, compare it to some of the ephemeral values that the Gemara talks about? And either way, if the issue is Shavu Pruta, then let's just talk about that. Why do we have to say there's this whole other concern and blame it on the Shavu Pruta? It's a little bit harder to understand. And then to try to figure out this machlokas, essentially the default machlokas, is there some theoretical viability for Kedushin of Matanah Manasa Hachzir? So we have to explore both Matanah Manasa Hachzir and Kedushin. So today we just explored Matanah Manasa Hachzir and saw that the Rosh and the Ritva understood that it's a complete transfer, that the original owner lets go of it totally, and therefore the condition of him getting it back can only be fulfilled with a formal kinyan back in his direction. And it sounds like that from the Gemara and Sukkah about the katan. And that has other implications of what the person can do with it when he has it. Shulchan Aruch indeed says it's theoretically possible for him to be makdish it. We discussed some questions about that. And other Rishonim and Achronim take sides in a different direction, that the Rush elsewhere, the Rush in his Chuvas, quotes with Victor Katz, who looks at Sachoshin also, takes that the idea is it's a Kenyan Lizman, it's a Kenyan that basically expires. And then within that question of this expiring Kenyan, there's still two versions you could have. You could say that it's a full Kenyan for that time, or you could say that it is a Kenyan HaPeros, it's only basically a usage Kenyan, but the item itself never actually transfers into the hands of the recipient, and that is very interesting in terms of implications. To say that it's nonetheless effective for anything is something that's going to require a little more explanation. All right, so that leaves us with one more question, which is who's that?